Welcome back to the John Krasinski Show. We have sale news to talk about. We also have season-ending interviews going on as we're talking. We're talking midday on Monday. John Krasinski is the other voice. You'll also hear Brandon Morton, our longtime producer. This is part of the TalkNorth.com podcast network. Follow us on Twitter at TalkNorthPod. Subscribe to the show or on your favorite podcast app. It's free. It's the easiest way to listen. All right, John. So they had a disappointing Saturday, a pretty fun Sunday, and now you're in the midst of interviewing people as they leave town. I look at this and I see a really terrible record and a coach fired and, you know, all kinds of, and a lot of bad basketball during the course of the year. And yet I leave feeling a strong sense of optimism because of the way Finch adapted, because of the way Russell played with Towns and Edwards, the way Edwards played, period. Am I being my usual giddy self, or do you see see this being kind of a good ending for the season for this team?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the way that I look at it is a lot of times we have seen this organization many times over the past probably 15 years where they have not had a good regular season. They've lost a bunch of games. Then at the end of the season, maybe they get a few wins that, you know, against playoff competition or something like that. And you start to think, okay, you know, maybe they are headed in the right direction. Maybe things are going okay. And invariably, it doesn't work out. I do think there is a chance that it's different this time. And I really believe that the main reason for optimism about it, this one possibly being different, about what kind of we saw down the stretch from this Wolves team, beating Utah a couple of times, beating Golden State, beating Miami, you know, the win against Dallas on Sunday. You see a team that could look differently and could take a few steps forward in the right direction, because I think Anthony Edwards has a chance to really be like that dominant presence, you know, both on the court, in the locker room. And he may be another year away, maybe 2 years away, to where he's really kind of physically and mentally ready to assume that mantle. But what we saw from him post All-Star break to the end of the season was all of the tools of a player who could be just the kind of yielding force that they have not had. Towns is a great offensive player, but because he's a big man, it's a little bit different in terms of trying to get him involved late in games and trying to, you know, have him sort of impose his will on an opponent. When you have a wing player like Anthony Edwards, who can get to the rim, who is so athletic and strong, who is really smart about his approach to the game, who wants to work and wants to get better, that's been the missing piece for this team forever and ever. That's what Jimmy Butler represented. And they could obviously, it did not work out for the long term. But I think Ant has the ability to be that kind of Jimmy Butler type impact player eventually. And so when you have that, and if they can kind of keep him on the right path developmentally and surround him the way that they need to surround him, that just all of a sudden changes the fortunes of your franchise. And so I think that's the biggest reason. Finch has had, there's definitely optimism for Finch and what he's been able to do. I think seeing D'Angelo Russell play well down the stretch is, again, another thing that is good for this team. But ultimately, it's Edwards. Like if he ascends to that place where he is capable of ascending, you have just an entirely different team.
More on Edwards coming up. We're going to talk about Kevin Garnett, the sale, and some of the other pieces that the Wolves have. Reminder, we have a lot of content now up at TalkNorth.com. Tons of outdoor content. Bar Down Beauties, Russo, LaPanta, Cheryl Reeve, John Krasinski, and I also do a Viking update show. And we have Jeff Diamond on Jeff Diamond's Vikings, an NFL insider. John Millay on preps. Roy Smalley and Lavelle on baseball. We have probably the best lineup in town. Thank you for listening. We do appreciate it. And so let's, you know, more on Edwards. Not only, you know, talent is vital, but man, the right kind of talent, the fact that he played in every single game, that he had a good attitude, that his teammates seem to like him, that he wants to be set. You know, I believe him when he says he wants to put in the work. Boy, there are a lot of ideal things about Anthony Edwards that I don't think we could have realistically anticipated a year ago.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, we've been over, but the questions about his love of the game, his attitude, kind of all of those things coming into his rookie season, coming into the draft, really just proved to be completely, unreasonable or inaccurate. He has the mental makeup that it just, brings a gravitational pull to his kind of, just orbit. I mean, you see how these teammates respond to him. They like him. They laugh with him, but they also understand like what he is capable of doing. And I think that they really have a lot of respect for the way that he works, for his ability to play every game, and just kind of for his overall attitude. And I think that the next transition or the next kind of step for Anthony Edwards will be learning how to leverage all of that goodwill, all of that respect to be demanding of his teammates and to kind of hold them accountable. Now, he is 19 years old. There's no way that he's ready for that or he should be expected to do that just yet. But I think over the next couple of years, if he is sort of able to really harness, all of that kind of charisma and channel it the right way to get guys ready to follow him, and to be okay with following him. Karl-Anthony Towns said something really interesting today when I asked him about sort of how things have changed with the core of this team now that Edwards is here with Russell and Towns, and Towns said that they just have to make sure they set egos aside, that none of that gets in the way, because you're going to see Towns and Russell are the veterans, the kind of the more established. They've both been all-stars in this league. Edwards is much younger, much has kind of more a longer way to go in terms of development of his overall skill set, but his raw ability probably exceeds both of theirs. And so, how do those three fit together? How do they, kind of make sure that everyone feels like invested in the team and like has a major role in the team, but also understanding when the time is right for Russell and Towns to get theirs, when the time is right for Edwards to get his. Like that's going to be sort of the tricky thing to navigate through the next couple of years with Chris Finch, with Gerson Rosas, with all of them. But if they can find a way to do that, and kind of if Edwards sort of naturally ascends, but also does it in a way where Towns and Russell still feel like they're leading the way just as much as he is, then you might have something. Then you might have an ability to really kind of just drive up the potential of this team to not only be in the playoffs, but eventually to be really competitive in the playoffs.
We talk so often about this franchise's bad luck as well as bad decisions. And they went into this last draft and were saying, okay, of course, typical Timberwolves have the number one pick in a bad draft. And then they come out of the draft with Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels. That might be the combination of drafting skill and luck that this franchise really needed.
I mean, yeah, and it can't be overstated, Jim, how important this has been because they have a roster right now with D'Angelo Russell and Karl-Anthony Towns being max money guys, with Ricky Rubio making 17 million, with Malik Beasley making 12 million, where they are up close to the luxury tax. So they also historically, Minnesota has had a very difficult time recruiting free agents to come and play here. And so when you're in that kind of environment, not much money to spend in a market that does not attract free agents, then you have to hit on your draft picks. And it's not even just at the top where Edwards, look, we'll be debating Edwards and LaMelo Ball for a long, long time, but Edwards certainly proved this year that he absolutely belongs in that conversation. He may even be ahead, depending on your perspective, but they got a real star there, at number one. So first things first, that settled in great. But to get Jaden McDaniels at number 28, a guy who looks like he can be a starter at small forward and a high caliber player for you defensively, offensively, that's the kind of thing that the Spurs did with Manu Ginobili, with Tony Parker. Like that's the kind of thing that you have to be able to do to give yourself a chance. And that, like let's also say for Rosas in the front office, getting Naz Reid undrafted is unbelievable. Like, you know, he is a rotation player. Getting Jared Vanderbilt as a throw-in in the Russell or in the Beasley Wancho trade, and Vanderbilt has become a good rotation player. Is he a starter? Is he not? We'll see. But he, you know, he provides value at a very low cost. And so those are the kinds of things that they have hit on. Yes, they missed on Jarrett Culver, but that happens with every regime. But so far, and then we'll see what Leandro Balmero comes out as too, but he's looked pretty good in Europe. So if they went 3-for-3 with their first round picks, I mean, that's franchise changing performance in a draft. And that's the kind of thing that you could look back on in 5, 6, 7 years if the Timberwolves ascend and become really competitive in the West. We'll be telling oral histories about that draft night and how that kind of really played a, you know, a huge role in laying the foundation for some sort of renaissance for them.
A lot more I want to get to. We want to thank our friends at TSR Injury Law, 612 TSR Time, 612 TSR Time. You know the drill by now. If you're injured, first call should be 612 TSR Time. You can also go to TSR Injury Law now, TSRinjuryLaw.com now or anytime to check out the work they've done, the money they have gotten back for the people they have represented, how they operate, you know, accolades. Details, all that stuff. But, you know, we've been talking to Steve Terry for a long time now. Just the most important thing is we don't want you to need the number, but if you need the number, it's 612 TSR Time. And I enjoyed last time we had Steve on and he got to giggle as John read his latest Manscaped ad.
That's right. Breaking news. This important PSA is brought to you by Manscaped.com. This is your pubic service announcement and the news you've all been waiting for. The Manscaped engineering team has confirmed that they have successfully created the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, which is now available for purchase in the USA and Canada. This new trimmer was just released only moments ago, and we are one of the first to get our hands on it and share the news. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code athletic at manscaped.com. What makes this trimmer different from all other trimmers? A new multifunction on-off switch can engage a travel lock created for people who like to travel. The Lawnmower 4.0 gives you the ability to turn the 4000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for more precise shave. The new trimmer even allows you to customize your trim all over through additional guard lengths with sizes 1 through 4, and looks-wise, it's sleek with a two-tone matte and gloss finish, even features a hot foil-stamped black chrome Manscaped logo. Show that mower off loud and proud. Get 20% off free shipping with the code ATHLETIC at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at the code using the code ATHLETIC at manscaped.com.
All right, let's talk about Kevin Garnett. He goes into the hall, and I don't know. I apologize if I'm not giving credit in the right place. I think I saw a note from Shooter. He could even possibly be part of the new ownership. But just talk me through what's going on with Kevin and what you thought of the induction speech.
Yeah, we'll see, Jim, on all of that. He did go in to the hall this weekend. He did thank Glenn Taylor, Kevin McHale, the Timberwolves organization as part of his remarks. It was a very kind of thank you filled address that wasn't a very, you know, super emotional thing for him, but I thought he did a good job of really just kind of mentioning everyone who helped him get to where he is. But he did not, you know, he did not cut out the Wolves or Glenn Taylor or anything like that. He very much was magnanimous in including them in his speech. Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez were there at the ceremony. I think that is kind of like a first step for them in the reconciliation process that everyone is hoping will happen now that this is, you know, the ownership, the agreement has been reached and that they are just waiting for Board of Governors approval on it. So whether, you know, that involves including Kevin Garnett in the ownership group or whether it's, you know, some other ways, they're definitely mindful of the rift that has been there for a long, long time. And they want to address it. Now, how does Kevin respond to that? What kind of role does he look at? You know, What is his relationship with Alex Rodriguez like? All those things will factor in. But I do think that A-Rod's just sort of status and stature as a hugely famous professional athlete probably will help this process, because he has been in KG's shoes. Like, he knows how all of this goes. And so I think he can help navigate this process. But both Rodriguez and Lori are very interested in repairing the relationship and kind of starting fresh. And we'll see how that goes. It will probably be a long process. I mean, that's just the way that it's going to be. But it's a great moment for him, for KG, a big moment for the organization. I had a story at The Athletic on Friday, just kind of, having some of the people who have been around him share tales, untold stories of Kevin Garnett. And I would definitely suggest for listeners to check it out, because there's just some great, great stuff you never heard about KG before, including from kind of the legendary equipment guy, Clayton Wilson, who was very close with KG, very close with Kirby Puckett. And he shared some just unbelievable stories, including, one where Kevin Garnett had this finger sleeve that he wore in every game, and he was very superstitious about it. It somehow got left back in Minnesota when they went to play in Memphis at the last game of a season of the 03-04 season with the number one seed in the Western Conference on the line. And Garnett was just totally beside himself that it had been left behind and didn't know how he was going to be able to play. He's just kind of this kind of super superstitious guy. And so Clayton tells a story of like this Mission Impossible where they got the finger sleeve to a pilot in Minneapolis who was flying to Memphis. He flew the sleeve to Memphis on his, on his plane. They rushed it over to the arena. Clayton grabbed it from outside the arena, ran it in and got it on KG's finger just before the game started. And there was just all of a sudden an immediate calm that swept over KG, and just like he just like, oh, okay, I can play now. And there's Sam Mitchell's in there. There's a great story from Jamar Washington, the old Minneapolis North high school star, about like a free throw shooting contest he was in with KG. Just awesome stuff. Just to kind of go down memory lane of the greatest Timberwolf of all time.
That's cool. I was remembering today in a Twitter exchange with a friend about KG back before he signed the big contract and became a symbol, supposed symbol of overspending in the NBA and in professional sports, which of course now we look, it's amazing how every contract that we think has blown up the sports world ends up looking small, 5-10 years mm-hmm. later. But I just remember how approachable he was before that. You could walk up to him at practice and actually have a conversation about just about anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing like how I'm trying to word this right. He lords over a franchise, right? I mean, he has just such a powerful influence on it, but really the connection between him and basketball fans, in this community, like, it's as strong as any athlete fan connection that I've been a part of. I mean, Randy Moss, I think, might be the other one that is that popular and that kind of beloved. Now, Puck, of course, from back in the day, but in this more modern era, there's just sort of like this symbol between of Garnett and of the basketball fandom in this town, and even casual fans of him, that I just don't know that it's been duplicated. And, he is so charismatic. He is so just what he represented in terms of giving an honest day's work every single night that he took the floor. All of that resonates so much. Now, yeah, he was incredibly difficult at times behind the scenes. Like, I mean, you talk to people over there at the organization, and I mean, there are the nightmare stories about just like how demanding he was, how surly he could be, like all of these things. And those are all true, no doubt about it. But at the same time, just the effect on winning, the effect on, the popularity of this team in this market. Like, if they ever found a way to get him back in some way, somehow, and walk that fine line of him being involved but not overly involved and all those other things, I mean, I think it would be a huge step for this franchise, because there is no one more powerful in this, you know, organization's history than he is. And it's just, he's singular. And I don't think that there's anyone like that in any of the other sports in this town. And so it's just going to be really interesting to watch to see how that's navigated the next couple of years here.
Really interesting trio you bring up. Puckett, Garnett, and Moss as three, I hate the word iconic, three transcendent athletes in their sports, because they're all very different. Puckett was incredibly popular, and he earned it in large part with his hustle and his personality and, of course, his clutch play. But he wasn't one of the greatest players of all time. He was a borderline Hall of Fame guy who, you know, really his statistics did not support the Hall of Fame. It was more projecting his statistics and what he meant in the game and everything that got him in. Then you have Moss, who's maybe the most talented receiver, one of the most talented players of all time. But he did take plays off, you know, and he did drive people crazy, and he did kind of force them to trade him. Garnett is kind of an interesting combination of the two. He had Puck's charisma and work ethic and absolute will to win. He had Moss. He had some, I don't know if anybody's as talented as Moss, but he had some Moss type ability. Mm-hmm. And he played a sport where you can be the dominant figure and touch the ball in every possession. And he was one of the greatest players of all time.
Yeah. I mean, when you think about, I just think about the three of them, and like, there was just something about all three of them that allowed them, like you said, I think transcend is the right word. Like, they go beyond just, you know, everyone knew who Puckett was. Now, you didn't just have to be a Twins fan or a baseball fan. Everyone in town knows Kirby Puckett. Like, everyone knew Randy Moss, and you didn't have to be just a football fan. Everyone knew KG, and, you know, there were plenty of people who are hockey fans or just not basketball fans that kind of just still understood, you know, what he represented and what he was, and you know, they're different personalities too, right? I mean, Puck was just really gregarious, and he was the guy that you walked into a bar, you wanted to see him on a corner, you know, and just joking and cracking jokes. Moss was kind of withdrawn and quiet. And then KG was intense and boisterous, but like in a snarling, howling way, not, you know, not like Puck, where it's like just kind of the everyman way. But they all managed to kind of cross over from just, you know, Timberwolf star, Viking star, Twin star, to kind of this greater plane in the public sphere, especially locally. And so, like, it's very hard to do that. It's very hard to cross over that way, but they all three did, and they all three did it in their own ways. And I think they all remain, you know, if you're talking Mount Rushmore of even just, let's just talk popularity. Let's just talk influence. Mm-hmm. I mean, those three guys are on it for sure in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I love the comparison there. There are a lot of things I want to get to in depth. I think we'll save them for off-season conversation, you know, some bench players, bench development, roster moves, what's going to go on with Ricky Rubio. We can talk more about the sale and how that's going to play out and all that. For today, let's just give me a quick summary on what the sale going through means and what it means that Taylor is going to kind of still be in charge until 2023. If I even have that right.
Yep, that's right. That's exactly right. They reached the agreement last week that they've signed the papers. So now this has gone from less of a concept to this is actually happening. And so what it means is Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez, provided that the NBA approves this ownership situation, which is expected to happen sometime later this summer, They're coming in and they're going to be involved right away in terms of kind of looking at what the organization needs, how do they help it, what kind of changes can be made, What do I expect? I think one of the reasons that, or one of the things to expect, because Taylor is staying in the lead role for the next couple of years, I think you will see kind of a soft approach early on in terms of personnel changes, in terms of those things, because Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez know that they have to get to know the NBA. They're fans of it, but they don't have a good feel yet for Gerson Rosas, for Chris Finch, for Karl Anthony Towns, for D'Angelo, for all of these things. So they want to evaluate. And so I think that they'll come in and kind of ease their way in and take time. It may even take a year to really evaluate and get to know everyone and how everyone works and what kind of changes that they want to make. And so that's going to be the key. But then I do think you will see bigger, more aggressive moves in terms of what they can do with technology in the building, like what they can do on the business side to kind of help, you know, the marketing and the operations of this team right now. Those are things that business people can do right away. And then they'll evaluate long-term about what the basketball side looks like and what decisions and what changes need to be made, what additions or subtractions need to be made there. So I think they'll take it easy to start, but they're going to come in with definitely a different energy, and we'll see if that's, you know, if they know what they're doing or they don't, but it's going to be totally different than the Glenn Taylor regime for sure.
Yeah, it's a fascinating era we're entering into, both in terms of players and in terms of ownership, front office. And we're going to have a lot to talk about this offseason. Again, we saved a lot of stuff I want to get into on this roster. We'll get to next week and in the coming weeks. Once again, thank you for listening to TalkNorth.com. Subscribe to your favorite podcast app. Thank you to our producer, Brandon Morton, and we will talk to you next week.